All right, what's up? We are finally on the air here. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, my co-host, the geek himself, Canucks insider Thomas Stratz, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Yes, we were delayed an hour for the Jays, and then even a little bit more there. And look, Drance, we both like doing the show. We enjoy our jobs. We're very, very lucky to be doing what we do for work. But what I've realized doing this job is even when you really like your job, there's something very intoxicating about the possibility of doing less work, especially on a Friday afternoon. And it was absolute scenes in the Sportsnet 650 bullpen rooting for that game to keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly as a joke. It's just fun to root for more baseball.
Yes. Man, I thought the Yankees were going to have to make a pitching change there. And I was like, oh, baby, that's another 5 minutes right there.
A little bit of an indictment on Vladdy that they didn't. Let's be real.
It absolutely
is. I'm so out on that team.
Let's not get into it. It's so, like, at the beginning of the year, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to relax and enjoy the Jays. Like, I have no expectations. Just enjoy baseball. And then, like, a weekend, I'm like, oh, my gosh. Well, score a run.
Well, I'm trying to help you, man. That team should be rebuilt. Maybe it'll work again. Maybe I can get lucky twice.
Can they do a big midseason trade that you hate? And see how it goes from there.
They've made lots of big mid-season trades that I've hated.
Yeah, there you go. All right. It is Canucks Talk. Batch is going to join us at 2. So we're on 1 to 3 today. So we're going an hour later. Batch is going to join us at 2. Dmitry Filipovich at 2:30 to wrap up the week as normal. Lots to get into today. So let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
So it is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 5th. We'll start with the headlines. Not a lot in terms of juicy headlines around the Canucks, but I do want to get into the Quinn Hughes-Norris conversation a little bit here. There was another one of Greg Wyshynski, of course, from ESPN, his periodical kind of straw poll update where he surveys different voters and different reporters about who might win the major awards. That was published today, and I started to get a little, this is the first time in a long time I've been concerned that this decision on who should win the Norris might not go in the proper direction, right? Because there was a lot. Now, Quinn Hughes was still the leader in Wish's poll here, in Wish's piece, right? He would still win the award based on the sample that Wyshynski had. But as we've seen kind of in general, there is a lot of momentum behind Roman Josi specifically, and even some Cale Makar truthers still out there. And again, this is the first time that I've been really concerned.
Truthers is a very good word.
This is the first time that I've been concerned that the voters might screw this up, because it is such an open and shut case from my point of view for Quinn Hughes.
One voter said so.
What? One voter who I really struggled to identify.
There's no, I don't know. I'm just saying there were some defenses of Quinn Hughes too.
Yes.
It's pretty balanced.
Yeah. It's just like some really familiar language to me used by one voter who said they were voting for Quinn Hughes.
How dare you?
What? You want me to protect your identity?
whose identity?
I literally read the quote and immediately texted you. I was like, this is you, right?
And I said I would not comment on
that. Couldn't possibly comment on that.
Yeah, no. What?
But anyways.
I think that allegation is quite untoward.
It's just so frustrating because even one of the voters references, like, well, maybe it's just recency bias with Roman Josi. It's like, yes, that's it. That it's recency bias. Don't acknowledge that it's recency bias and then fall into the trap. I just really struggle to come up with any rationale for why it shouldn't be Quinn Hughes, other than, like, they were the most exciting story earlier in the year and now they're not the most exciting story, which is frankly, I think, ridiculous. And I'm just really crossing my fingers and praying that the voters get this win right. It's a layup,
but it's a subtle layup. right? Because the production is close between Hughes and Makar, mm-hmm. right? Roman Josi is leading a pretty impressive late season charge for the Predators that's, you know, narratively compelling to people, right? And, of course, and we actually go through this ourselves, Jamie, Quinn Hughes's value doesn't look the way we're used to seeing an elite defenseman's value look,
mm-hmm.
right? Right up and down, right up to like, you know, I say it all the time. I'm like, I'm not used to the Canucks having a pair that drives play like this. It kind of breaks my brain. It changes how we have to discuss what this team is. There's like an unfamiliarity to the idea of a defender who is Quinn Hughes' size, whose defensive impact is far greater than a lot of like more physical, hulking, prototypical defensive defensemen, and whose primary value to the Canucks is the way that he actually drives play from the blue line, which again, like we're talking about, we see like Letang, Carlson, like we see like two guys a decade
yeah.
that have this kind of impact. And, you know, it's, I feel like it's just something where Hughes's brilliance is subtle enough that if you're not watching him closely and watching the rest of the league, it's easy to be like, well, I don't know about that, you know, but that's what it is. So anyway, I think he's going to win it. I'm not like,
I still think he is too, but it's just,
it might be closer than it should be.
So in the last one, in the March edition of Wyshynski's piece, Quinn Hughes got 78% of the first place votes. This time he got 57%. So that's a pretty steep downward trend over the course of a month.
Yeah.
Not a lot of room for it to tail off further than that. Now, some of those first place votes might be split between Josi and Makar, right? So that works in Quinn Hughes' favor. And again, I'm not necessarily panicked. It's just, I thought it was in the bag. I thought it was wrapped up. And even, you know, Quinn Hughes was so good against Arizona. Like, he had, what, 3 goals in his last 2 games, yeah, right, to pad those
totals
a little
bit. But it's Arizona, and everyone was watching Dallas. Like,
but still,
I'm a little
nervous. I'm a little nervous is all I'm going to say.
Look, could he use, I mean, I've been saying it. I think he could use another signature
performance. One more signature game, yeah.
Yeah, and a signature performance that's not at Mullet Arena would help.
That's true.
What?
Yeah. No, against LA, against Vegas, against yeah. Edmonton, right? In one of those remaining games.
Like, you want to capture the attention of the hockey world for something you do against the Arizona Coyotes? Bid in the land auction.
It's going to be so awesome if somebody else bids. That's going to be so good. The other just thing I wanted to mention in terms of headlines for the Canucks is Noah Juulsen nominated by the writers here, this chapter of the Writers Association, for the Bill Masterton Trophy for the Vancouver Canucks. Of course, every team has a player nominated for the award. So shout out to Noah Juulsen, who's been a really great story since he's yep. joined the Canucks organization and had a really good year for the team.
One overcame a ton of injuries early yep. in his career. You know, has really established himself as a everyday level defenseman, I think. And, you know, it's been great for him and great for the Canucks.
Yeah. So congratulations to Noah Juulsen. His great story continues this year. For the broadsheet, just one thing I wanted to mention here. Rick Dhaliwal on with Halford and Brough earlier today mentioned that he has not heard that there's been any talks between the Canucks and any of their unrestricted free agent defensemen. So that's obviously Tyler Myers, Nikita Zadorov, Ian Cole. No talks with any of them. As Dhaliwal says, that could just be a matter of seeing what Filip Hronek, the RFA, gets and trying to kind of figure out how much you have left to allocate to the blue line. But, you know, obviously there's been, we've heard that, you know, like we get a lot of texts from fans hoping to re-sign Nikita Zadorov. We've heard mutual interest between them and Tyler Myers. Ian Cole, we hear less about, maybe seems less likely for a reunion next year, although you never know. But interesting to hear that there's been no substantive discussions whatsoever between the Canucks and the unrestricted free agent defenseman at this point in time. And if they're waiting on Filip Hronek, like, that's the kind of thing that could take a while to resolve. So we might not see any action on that front anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, waiting on Filip Hronek for now is fine. But, you know, we are talking about a team where you have 3 defensemen who have played regular minutes for this team signed beyond the season,
mm-hmm.
right? You are going to enter a world where Soucy, Juulsen, and Hughes are it. And this club's resources are going to be finite in fleshing out what that defensive group looks like, especially if Hronek costs the amount that, you know, most of us think he will, which is certainly well north of 7. You know, it is interesting that they're not necessarily being proactive about it. But again, I think this team's governing philosophy at the moment anyway is we're going to have time to keep the guys we want.
Mm. I wonder also how much of it is, okay, let's say you wanted to keep Tyler Myers, but for whatever reason, it doesn't work out. He's not willing to take the money that you would think is acceptable. If you are confident in your ability to go out and find a similar player on free agency, right? Or at least you're not scared, right? It's not like, oh my goodness, what happens if we lose these players? They just had such a successful dip into free agency last year. I wonder if there's a little bit of we're happy to bring these guys back if the number works, but if it doesn't work, we're going to go out and try to replace them at a reasonable rate in free agency as well, because we saw they were able to do that pretty successfully last summer. So I wonder how much that plays into it too. So that was just a little note from Rick Dhaliwal that I wanted to pass along there in the broadsheet. Lineup notes. So the team, I think, is on the ice practicing down in LA. Of course, they play the Kings tomorrow, Saturday night. We'll see if we get any reporting down there on lineup combinations, who's on the ice, audio from Rick Tocchet, anything like that. Of course, it'll be interesting, you know, after they went 11-7 in the game against Arizona, how did they line up at practice? Are there any different line combinations? Any guys poised to get back in the lineup after being out? And then, of course, the other big conversation.
Well, Hugh Suter has to get back in.
You would think so. And then the other big conversation, of course, and we probably won't get an answer to that today, but would be who's set to start net tomorrow. Do they give serious consideration to Archer Seelov's getting a second straight start?
I would hope so, right?
Probably have to at least think about it.
Well, I think you have to think about it both because Seelovs has played well and because you've still got a lot of games left. You know, like, it's not like DeSmith's not getting at least a couple more games here, before the end of the season. So I think you've got the flexibility to play Seelovs in another game. And I think this club's got the need to evaluate as thoroughly as possible what Seelovs can potentially offer them next season. So, you know, give this guy his 8th NHL start for sure.
The other thing I should just mention from Rick Dhaliwal was on Thatcher Demko's potential return timeline. I know a lot of people, myself included, have looked at Monday's game at home against Vegas as a potential return. Dhaliwal, not saying it wouldn't happen like that, but just pumping the brakes a little bit, saying, you look, they're not going to rush him. They don't need to bring him back for that one. Of course, the next game, which I would think would be a really nice spot, is Wednesday at home against Arizona. If you get past that game, then there's only 3 left in the season, including on the road at Edmonton. So that's kind of a tough spot to bring Thatcher Demko back after a long layoff on the road against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. So
can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How many games of the 3 that, like, because game 82 probably isn't going to mean anything,
mm-hmm.
and it won't be a shock if, like, Quinn Hughes plays 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, or not at all. But how many of the upcoming LA, Vegas, and then Edmonton game 80 games do the Canucks have to win to settle down the they can't beat good teams thing?
So of LA, Vegas, Edmonton, Winnipeg, or not even counting Winnipeg?
Not counting Winnipeg, because I think there's a real possibility that that game won't matter.
I think
at all.
Probably 2.
You think they need to go 2 of 3?
Like,
or
not
people
to convince me, but to settle that conversation down. Although, frankly, I'm not even sure that would do it at this point.
No?
Because it's become so ingrained.
If they go 0-3.
Oh, it's going to be.
Will it change how you feel?
It completely depends on how those games play out. More than the record.
Right.
It completely depends on how competitive they are, how close they are, all of those things, how, like, the underlying performance. If they look outclassed in all 3 of those games, yeah, I think that's absolutely cause for concern at this stage,
mm-hmm.
given how much Rick Tocchet wants them to be ramping up and improving their game. If you don't see evidence of that against really good teams that you could play in the playoffs, I think that's legitimate cause for concern. Do you agree?
I don't know. I don't think any of this matters, man. I'm going to be honest with you. I just don't think you can learn anything from the last 20% of the season. It's a long-standing bias of mine. It has frequently put me at odds with other analysts in this market. Sometimes that's worked out for me. I think for the most part it has. I just, like, I don't believe the last 20% tells you anything. Unless you've made a material change, and it's like, well, since that change.
Right.
You know, and so for me, it's like, well, since the All-Star break, that sort of stuff, because that's a 27-game sample, and the Canucks lost Kuzmenko off their roster and added Lindholm at that point. I mean, to me, that's, like, meaningful. But, you know, their record in games against playoff teams in the last month,
yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, you are cutting it way too fine for that to mean more to me than what I've seen over, you know, 82.
Well, that's what I mean in terms of the underlying process really matters, right? Because it's not just like, oh, you need to be hot in the last 2 weeks going into the playoffs. It's not just, you know, record against good teams in the last 6 weeks or whatever. As you said, it's kind of a post All-Star break funk or malaise. And specifically, the same issues that started to crop up then are still issues, in particular, the struggle to score, the struggle to generate scoring chances. So I think it's absolutely fair to want to see signs of correction, signs of improvement in those areas. Again, because it's not like these are a blip. It's not like it's just a few games. If it was that, then I'd agree with you. I'd be like, yeah, whatever. It's the end of the season. Who cares? But I think the fact that it stretches all the way back to like the beginning of February, that's a good chunk of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
27 games is a consequential sample.
Yeah.
But also, if the Canucks had gotten here in a different way, like here's the other thing to think about. Like, if the Canucks had gotten here in a different way, right? If they'd been, you know, if they'd gotten to this point, but it was like with a stellar run in the last 20, a stellar run in like December instead of in October and November, I feel like people would be saying, well, you know, they lost those games, but they were close against good teams. Like, this is still a team with a shot. And there'd be a totally different veneer around it. It's like they're being judged against some standard that they set themselves 4 or 5 months ago. And I don't know. It just doesn't feel like,
well, or
it matters.
Or if they had, instead of, you know, having the feeling of kind of clinging on to the division lead, like what if they'd had their best 2 months in the last 2 months and like stormed from third place to be winning the division?
Well, then it would be a party.
Then it would be a completely different conversation, even if the record was identical, right? So I get what you're saying, that there's always the shape of a season can weigh really heavily in people's minds, maybe sometimes more than it should. We're better off just looking at the whole sample. But again, I don't, like, that holds the most weight for me when you can kind of write things off as luck or random distribution. I think there's more going on there with the Canucks' underlying performance. So I think it's fair to want to see certain things. Not that it's like panic time if they don't or if they lose those games or whatever, but you want to see them be competitive. You want to see them start to right the ship a little bit.
See, I think this team's like very dependent on outworking opponents.
That's just not realistic at this point in the calendar.
Correct. And so I just can't read too much into it.
But then do you get concerned about the flip the switch thing?
No,
like
if
you take 3 weeks off or more, like a month off from outworking teams, you know what I mean?
I think you could give an NHL player 5 months off and then throw them in an NHL playoff game and they'd be willing to run through a wall.
The adrenaline would carry them.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, like flip the switch. Like it's weird because every single player who
does
plays
that
this sport is going to flip the switch in a few months. Like, what are we talking about? Or in a month? Like, a month from now, the games are going to look nothing like the 80% pace that we saw at Mullet Arena the other day. We know this.
And thank goodness for that.
And thank goodness for that. It's going to be thrilling. So it's just like, I don't know. I fundamentally cannot get too worked up about Vancouver's results, good or bad, at this point in the year.
And that's why you should tune in for the next 2 weeks to Canucks talk before the playoffs. Because none of this matters.
Because we are in preseason 2.
Yeah. The postseason edition.
We love preseason.
That's true. Preseason is fun.
And this is fun, too. It's just, you know, we'll do the Hughes-Norris watch, I guess.
All right, playoff forecast.
Okay, moving on.
No Oilers in action, but the Canucks' chances do creep up to win the division to 80% compared to yesterday where they're at 78%. So maybe just some, you know, reassessing the strength and weaknesses of different teams going on there. But interestingly, Predators and the Kings both win, so that makes the Preds slightly more likely to stay ahead of the Kings in the first wildcard spot, which means they're now the most likely first-round matchup for the Vancouver Canucks at 37% per Dom's model. Still very much a three-horse race, though. LA, 31% chance of being the opponent. Vegas, 25% chance. So Vegas's odds have decreased fairly significantly of running into the Canucks in the first round, but really still it could quite easily
and be
any three of those teams.
And that's simply because of LA's win?
I believe so, yeah.
So, but I don't understand. Why would an LA winning make Vegas less likely to be the
Canucks'
opponent?
Well, I think it's there's so many different permutations.
Is it
here,
because
right?
It's because Nashville also won?
Yeah.
Got it.
So
we're just adding uncertainty more than we're adding.
So basically, the way, like, either LA or Vegas could finish third in the Pacific,
yeah,
right? But they could also, I think basically, they could also either finish in either wildcard spot.
Right.
And then there's the chance of the Canucks, the slight chance of the Canucks dropping to second in the Pacific, which would put either Vegas or LA in play more. Or there's the chance that they're second in the Western Conference.
Although the model thinks there's a 20% shot of that. I think it might be, yeah, I don't know. I think it might
there's
be
There's a
LA,
lot going on.
It might be LA's chances of finishing third that are spiking. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So they're like occupying the majority. Anyway, whatever. Fact is we have no idea who the Canucks are going to play yet.
There's one of three teams.
It's one of three.
It's one of three teams, and there's still a million different ways it could go and a million different permutations within those three teams. But right now, at least, technically, Nashville is the favorite to play the Canucks in the first round.
How do you feel about that?
I'm back to that being my preferred option. 100%.
Over LA?
Yes. 100%.
Oh, man. I don't know. Anyway.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens tomorrow, but no, I'd take Nashville.
Gambling odds. Quinn Hughes has actually spiked back up in the betting markets despite the results of Wyshynski's piece. Minus 500 versus the field. Plus 400 if you think anyone else is going to win it. Which was a bet that I recommended a few months ago, and actually feels like it was worth a 4-to-1 shot a month and a half ago, right? Like at the time I recommended
absolutely.
That bet, I'd say that aged well. Line isn't open yet for the Canucks game tomorrow.
That's the whiteboard for today, April 5th. It's a delayed edition of Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. We'll go to 3 o'clock, although to be honest, I'm going to have to dip out a little early, so it'll just be Drance and Dmitry Filipovich for the final segment. But still lots of time before that. Get your text in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.